Counselor Accents Podcast. Two school counselors who love their jobs. Oh, and they happen to have Southern accents too. Bless their hearts.
I am Kim Crumbly.
And I'm Laura Rankhorn.
And together we are Counselor Accents, and I'm super excited today, Laura.
I am too. I'm probably more excited.
I don't think that's possible.
We have Dr. Lena Perlman with us, and we just told her we feel like we know her. We're going to let her introduce herself, but we came to know her because we had her husband on a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Brian Perlman, and we discovered Dr. Lena Perlman is an author and a wealth of knowledge on her own, and she wrote Stay Here, Your Personal Journal to Staying Present, a mindfulness journal. Dr. Lena Perlman, we are excited to have you. Go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So, as you said, my name is Lena, and I have a private practice in St. Louis, Missouri, where my husband and I both work. And we work with all sorts of people doing all sorts of different kinds of counseling, depending on what someone needs, inclusive of grief counseling, which is a pretty big deal right now with everything that's going on.
And that is a perfect segue because we want to talk to you about grief today. Yeah. So let's start with just that common feeling that educators, students, even parents may be feeling right now, just the loss of those activities, the loss of the school year. Talk to us a little bit about how people might be feeling.
Yeah, it does not discriminate grief. And people all over, different states, different schools, different grade levels, administrators, teachers, custodians, the cooks, the kids, the parents, everyone is feeling this grief. Everyone is feeling a loss of what they had planned for, mm-hmm. a loss of what they had thought was going to happen in the school year, especially the latter half of the school year, which is where everything kind of started happening. Teachers didn't get to finish what they started. Students didn't get to complete what they began. There was no finality. There was just this shock of, we're not coming back. And everyone experienced that very differently because grief is experienced very differently by different people. But the common thread is we didn't get to say goodbye. And that happens all the time in grief, right? When someone dies, we don't get to say goodbye. And even if we do, it never looks how we thought it would look, right? So even though teachers and students are meeting via Zoom and other things, it's not the same. And so that there's grief for that loss too. You know, it doesn't look the way we thought it was going to look.
Dr. Perlman, is there a line between grief, fear, anxiety? Do all of those, are they separate in our brains, or do they all kind of culminate into this one emotion that we're all feeling? The unknown, the changes.
That's a really good question. I think that grief is experienced with different feelings for different people. So some people experience it with a lot of anxiety. Some people go into the depression aspect of it. Some people have both. Some people have fear. Some people have anger. And so I think it's a culmination of a lot of emotions uniquely to the individual. And so it comes out looking differently for different people. Some people are crying. They're sad. Some people feel chaos, like they have zero control over what's going on, which breeds anxiety, right? Because chaos is anxiety. Some people feel, you know, that depression where it's just beyond sad. It's like, I can't get out of bed. I don't have anything that's driving me or motivating me. So I think that there's a lot of different emotions going on, and they are as unique as we are human. And so everyone looks a little bit different in their grief.
This grief, it feels like, I think when this first started, it was almost like you have a honeymoon period. You feel like in anything we've ever had before that we can put our minds back to former things that have happened in our community where schools have shut down, maybe tornadoes that came through or whatever. that we have that honeymoon feeling like, well, it's different. We can do this. And now as time goes on and stretches on, I feel like, you know, that grief is now maybe starting later. I mean, am I making sense? Is that, are you seeing some of that? Like they were fine and now we're not fine anymore.
Very much so. I think you used the term correctly. We had this honeymoon period. First, we had shock, right? We were told we're not coming back. And so then we had that shock like, wait, what do you mean we're not coming back? I can't even go back to get my stuff. I can't go back to, you know, talk to the kids. And that felt like it was like, okay, we can adapt to this. We're still going to see them on Zoom. We're still going to conduct some classroom activity. It's okay. And then as time went on, and I would say probably around week 5 or 6, I started hearing things from my clients, my patients, like, okay, I'm ready for this to end now. I'm done with it. I've slept. I've cleaned out my closets. I've done my Zooms. I've been on my walks. I've cooked more than I've ever cooked before. I'm done. I'm done. I'm ready for things to happen again. And when we don't have that, okay, so when is it going to end kind of thing? That's when we start to become frustrated. We start to bargain. Well, maybe I could just go out for a little bit. But everyone's saying, no, don't go out. You know what I mean? They start to really experience the intensity of grief. And grief is not linear. So we can start somewhere and end somewhere else and then go back to where we started. And experience the different stages of grief all over again, depending on what's going on around us. And that's what I think is happening now more intently.
Wow, Laura, bargaining. Yeah, the bargaining. I've never, you know, when you think about the stages of grief, you're exactly right. Because I feel myself saying, well, would this be okay? We are bargaining.
Right.
Well, and the linear comment too. I have never thought of that. But just in my own life, I have experienced grief. And you think you get to a certain point and you're over it, but something can knock you off your rocker and you're right back at square one. And that makes so much sense. And I see that with our school year too, that and in that article that we wrote, we referenced, but I didn't think of it in the linear form like you said, but I can see shopping for school supplies. And all of a sudden it hits you that you missed out on the experience of this year.
Right. And then you also worry about, so what does this mean for our kids? What does this mean for our teachers? What is it going to look like? Because we don't know. We know it's not going to look the same. We know that. But we don't know concretely. And we have had that information in the past, right?
Yeah.
School year started a certain way, worked a certain way, and ended a certain way. And now that's up in the air. We just don't know what that's going to look like. And so I'm seeing a lot of things. I'm hearing a lot of things about, you know, if we go back to school and there's a grief associated with that if, what if we don't? And so people are starting to sort of internalize what if we don't? And what does that mean for us? How does that translate into what life will look like? And unfortunately, no one has the answers to that. The one thing that I continue to say to my patients, to staff people that I work with who are in schools, is we cannot live in the what ifs. We have to live in the what is. And what is right now, we are not going back to school this time right now to finish off school. And that's sad. And you're allowed to feel sad. You're allowed to grieve that. What you can't do and is live in the future of what we don't know is going to happen yet.
What are some coping? What do we do? What can we share with our listeners that want to live in the, you know, they want to live in the what's going to happen instead of the right now? What do we do? What do we tell those folks?
I would ask them, what are you getting out of that? Because all that creates is chaos, because you don't have an answer and I don't have an answer and no one has a crystal ball. So to put yourself in a place, to live in a place that hasn't happened yet, is just going to breed more chaos and anxiety. And so I would ask them, and this is what I do with my patients, is I ask them, tell me where you are right now. This is more tangible. Today is the only day that's guaranteed to any of us. So we have to live in the today. So the questions have to be, the comments have to be, what do I want to accomplish today? What do I have control of today? What is good today? What is not good today? right, and stay here, because this is the only things we actually have any control.
That's so good. So good. What would you suggest as far as when there's a death, you have a funeral or some kind of service and there's closure?
Yes.
And in this case, there's no real closure for this year. And looking forward to next year, it is unknown. So we're kind of stuck in this in between of, okay, I don't know if I can plan for next year because I don't know what that's going to look like. Is there any sort of closure that you could recommend for an educator or student or parent that's stuck in that in between right now?
Yeah, it's a really great question, because this pandemic and the way we are currently living is completely brand new. I feel like it's so important to be unique in that closure process to the individual, because the way we're going to handle it with a 10-year-old is different than the way we're going to handle it with a 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I do think that it's important to be able to work together and specific to the individual, specific to the teacher, specific to the administrator, specific to the parents, specific to the kid. So I suggest things like write the letter, you know, talk about the things that you missed, talk about the ways that you feel. And for littler kids, it might be a drawing, it may be a play activity. But do it, if possible, with the teacher via the Zoom. The way that we would do it if we were in the classroom and saying goodbye at the end of the school year, we can do that. It's going to look different, but we can still do that. And it may be old school, let's write a letter and send it to each other. It may be on Zoom. It may be some other way. But I do think that in order for us to move forward, we have to have that sort of traditional you next year.
Yeah.
Even though we don't know what next year is going to look like, or I miss you, or can we do another Zoom session before the school year is over? Something that gives them some control over what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah. I have a 5-year-old. She's in kindergarten, and I've been very careful with the way that I've explained it to her and some of my friends who have younger children. I have said we can't put our grief on our young ones because they don't really know what we know as far as what the year is supposed to look like. This is their first round at school, so they don't know whether we get out in March or not. So I've been very careful, even with the language that I've used in my own lessons with the younger students. And so I don't know. That's just a tip to our listeners, I guess, that I would say we can't put our own grief on our children. We have to let them process this on their own and go through it on their own.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we have to be really mindful of the fact that, you know, how we're taking all of this is different. How we would discuss it with our older kids mm-hmm. is different. How we would discuss it with our kindergartners. Mm-hmm. They're in different places. And so we have to accommodate to where they are. And you're right. We don't want to put our grief, what we know, because they don't know what they don't know. And mm-hmm. we don't want to put what we know onto them because they're not ready for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of my friends have said things like, well, they're missing out on field day. Well, they don't know that. And yeah. So I'm not going to tell her, hey, you're missing out on field day. I just want you to know.
Exactly. Or exactly.
So, yeah.
I totally agree with that. We know what they're missing out on, but they have no idea.
Right.
Okay. That's a gift.
Right.
And I think even with older students mm-hmm. and I think we have an opportunity to help them look for the positive. If they don't have, you know, I'm thinking of even our seniors and, you know, I think as I've seen educators do this, I'm from a family of educators. And I think sometimes we do put our own fears and our own, because as we've lived longer, we have seen more and we have more trauma in our past possibly. And we can pass that along very easily. And they may not be mature enough or have the coping skills. So for any age, I think we have to be really careful. And Dr. Perlman, I like your thoughts on that. But I think like with our seniors, you know, we just have to make the most out of it and say, hey, you're making history. You know, here's this, you know, you're making history. No other that we know of, you know, because, you know, I think back, Dr. Perlman, I have had some, this just thought came to me. I had some veterans come back when I was at the high school who never graduated. So in order to graduate, I had to go back into old annuals and find, because our school burnt and they needed to get there, they could receive a diploma even though they had to leave and go off to war. So I wanted to say this is new, but you know, really, people have survived, generations have survived. So they were not able to graduate, and to see these veterans come back who had to leave and go to war, World War II, and I could help them get that. So thinking back, I guess nothing's new. Everything is new, but nothing is new.
And we the thing remains the same is what do you need? How can we help? How are you feeling as opposed to, here's what I think you need. Here's how I want to help you. Here's how you should be feeling, right? Because everyone's taking this differently. I had this experience with kids. They're graduating college this year. You know, and I'm like, oh my goodness, you must feel so sad that you can't walk down with your class. Both my kids looked at me and they're like, we're good. So we're fine. And I'm like, yeah, damn it, you are. So the way I was feeling about it is completely different than how they were feeling about it. So it's really about being mindful about where they are, not necessarily where I am. I can deal with my own stuff.
That's so good. Yeah. So good.
Well, sadly, there are families who have experienced the death of a loved one through this. And there are schools that have experienced the death of a faculty member. And rather than an isolated death that schools may experience on a yearly basis, this may be more widespread throughout the school. So let's talk for a second about how to provide support for those families. And this is going to be a double question here, but how can we provide support from a distance? And then also once we get back, what sort of systems should we look at putting in place to provide support for these families?
I'm going to start with the second question first.
Okay.
I think that grief counseling is going to be very prominent coming up because we have had so much death. Whether you know someone or you know someone who knows someone or whatever the case may be. It's more out there, it's more in your face, and it doesn't matter if you're 5 or 15 or 50. We're all experiencing death in one form or another. And so grief counseling coming to the school for the teachers, for the administrators, for the counselors, for the kids, for the parents, I think is going to be so vital. And what I'm hoping happens, I don't have any control of this, but what I hope is going to happen is that they're going to invite outside people in, come and do these grief groups for everyone so that they can then pass that along when a kid comes to them and is grieving in a different way with them than they would with their parent, right? And have that available across the board, administrators, parents, counselors, teachers, children. All the same.
That's such a good point. And you made a great point here as in bringing in outside sources to do the grief group, because Kim, you know, as school counselors, there is a line in what we can do as far as group grief therapy, any therapeutic as a school counselor, which is sad for a lot of us who are counselors at heart. Now, talk to me about, like, you're in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to bring a group in, I know we would have to run that by the school system, but tell me just, for example, what you all would do if a school invited you to come in.
So if we could travel, then we would travel, right? If we had to do it by Zoom, we would do it by Zoom. As you know, my husband, Brian, he travels all over the country doing a lot of trainings. Grief has been a part of that because grief is part of life. Can't not talk about it. And what I find is that a lot of people, not all people, but a lot of people, especially when it comes to doing any kind of grief support for kids, they're very uncomfortable. They don't, the word dead or death or loss or whatever, you can try to sugarcoat that a little bit, especially with the young ones. And ultimately, that doesn't really help. So part of grief counseling, part of grief training, part of grief support is making sure that the people who are going to be providing this, not only are they getting it for themselves, but they get comfortable with the words so that they can use those words with the kids, with other people, with their own families. So I think that my hope is that wherever you are, you have outside supports. And if you don't, then you contact someone who can come into the school, come into the school via Zoom, whatever is going to happen, and provide that, give you guys the outlet to be able to grieve with each other and then help the students that are going to be coming in.
I think that's a good, you know, I think a lot of districts are now trying to, I know we have discussed it, you know, okay, now let's come up with a plan. So I think a lot of counselors are part of that planning with their district, how before we can even think about the academics, we've got to handle yes. emotional, our emotional selves. So, and I think So we know that, and I know Dr. Perlman, your husband, had also given us some really good ideas, some really practical tips for teachers. If you need help, here's a number. Here is, you know, we need to have something in place so that we have those numbers, we have those contacts. So I guess the rubber meets the road on this, Laura, for us would be find those people in our area. Or it wouldn't have to be in our area if it's Zoom. However, our school is going to start back and provide that for those that need it.
And a lot of people, a lot of teachers may think this of counselors or social workers or therapists, that they, why aren't you grieving? You know, and the fact is that we're all grieving. We're just grieving very differently. And so it's okay and it's safe to be able to say, I'm grieving too. Right. And the way I grieve is different than the way you grieve. And here is, you know, what I used to do when I was a young social worker, when I first started this, I had this resource book and it was huge. It was like that thick. And it had every number of every resource that was in the St. Louis area, because I saw all sorts of people from all sorts of places in Missouri that needed all sorts of different things. So something that is a tangible product that you can have at the end, number one, is going to be so helpful. But number two is going to make you feel good because you put that together and now it's available to the masses.
That is a great tip.
That is what, that, you know, we like practical.
Uh-huh.
We like here is what you can do. I think for counselors, because we are limited, but we are advocates. So this is the need. And I love that idea, Laura. That's something that we can share with our district. And I think our listeners can share, put something together, have it in place.
And everyone's going to know something different, something that you don't know, right? Research is so much easier now than it was 20 years ago when I put my resource book together, that it is doable, right? My kids are helping put it together now. Their friends who have other experiences in other areas of Missouri are saying, here, did you have this number? Did you know
that? Oh, wow.
Offers that. It's amazing. And it's tangible. And it feels positive.
Well, that makes me feel better. I mean, yeah. It makes me feel better that I want to do something that I know is helpful, but it's also helping me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like you said, grief is different for everyone. And we talk about this a lot, but we have to take care of ourselves first. And that's so hard to remember when you know that you have students and teachers that you care about who are hurting. Our gut reaction is to go take care of them first, but we have to remember to take care of ourselves first. And maybe why we look like we're not grieving, because we have taken care of ourselves first. But like you said, I love the linear model there. Right. It may sneak up and we have to be prepared for that too.
Right. And when they talk to you, maybe you're in a different place than that. in that grief process.
Right.
Right. And we do. We have to put a mask on first. I use this visual with my patients all the time. Pretend you're in an airplane. What do they say to you before they ever take off? Why would they want you to put your mask on first? Why you first? And yeah. they think about that for a while, and some people come up with it right away and some people don't. I don't understand why they want me to put my mask on first.
Oh, wow.
Right. And when they start visualize that, it makes perfect sense. I can't help any of these people if my mask isn't on.
Right.
Right. And so we have to put our mask on first. And then we have to be able to say to whomever we're helping, I can do this because I put my mask on. So now we need to put your mask on so that you can do what you need to do.
So good. We do talk a lot about coping skills. That's kind of our route to help grieving students mm-hmm. as school counselors. We talk about coping skills. And one of them is journaling. So I definitely want you to talk about your book. Tell us about your book and tell us about some other coping skills that you would recommend for students, teachers, whoever.
So I'm a big fan of people journaling, and people journal in a lot of different ways. They don't know that that's a thing. People think that journaling is writing, you know, in a notebook. And that's not. I've had people journal through poetry, through music, through art, through dance. I've had people journal traditionally. I've had people journal on their phones, on a notebook. There's no limit to how people can express themselves. And some people don't connect with writing. They connect with lyrics. Some people don't connect with lyrics. They connect with physical something, dance, something. And so I wrote the journal because I was asking people to find a journal that made sense to them. And I wanted them to have the mindfulness, the stay here, the presence in that journal. They need prompts because people struggle with staying in the moment. People are really good at living in the past or living in the future, but staying here, not so much. So I was asking my patients to look for something that had those things in it, and they couldn't find it. And so I started looking for something. And I couldn't. So I got frustrated and I decided to write my own. So that's how that came to fruition. Like, here is exactly what I want you to be working on. Since it doesn't exist, I'm just going to make it. So I made it.
I love that. She's a girl after our own heart, Kim.
Yes, yes.
Because I need it. I want you to stay here. If you're not here, then you can't experience the good.
Yeah.
That is here. You can't experience the bad either, but you can't experience the good. And so you're missing it.
Yeah. And how timely, because that's how we opened this episode, was with talking about the present, you know, not worrying about the what, not thinking about the past and what we missed out on, but talking about the present. And so I can see that that would be very helpful for so many of our listeners and their students and families right now.
And it's easy to do. That's the other thing. People don't have a lot of time, even though we feel like we have a lot of time right now. At the end of the day, we still have a life to live, right? And so people don't have a lot of time. And so this journal is, you know, 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes before bed. It's legitimately that simple. And it keeps you grounded. It keeps you present. It keeps you in the day, in the morning when you wake up and at night before you go to bed. You've had full experience of that day. And that's the goal. Because if you could stay here, you could stay mindful, then you're not missing it. You're living the life that you want to live to the fullest. There's some bad in that, but there's also good in that.
Wow.
So can we get that on Amazon, Dr. Perlman? I mean, is that something that our listeners could order?
Absolutely. It is on Amazon. It's called Stay Here. If you just type it into the search engine, it'll pop right up.
And I think your husband mentioned this, but all of the proceeds from your books go toward your nonprofit. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Right. The whole goal is to help people. So we just make that a revolving door.
Wonderful.
Well, can you think of any other coping skills that you would recommend for grief?
For grief, I think it's important to talk. I'm a therapist, so I believe in talk therapy. I've seen what good it could do when someone unstuffs all those feelings that they stuff down, right? Which become toxic, which become heavy, which become burdensome. So I guess the best coping skill is to talk about how you're feeling, to use the words that best describe that. And some people have a hard time coming up with the emotional connection to the emotion that they're feeling. So using those words and talking through it and being vulnerable, and allowing that other person to be vulnerable too, it's going to help that situation. Grief is an important thing to go through. You don't over it. You just continue to move through it. And the only way that that happens is if you talk about it. And you may talk about it for 5 minutes, or you may talk about it, you know, every day for a while, and or forever, right? It's a way of remembering somebody for some people. It's a way of reliving happy memories, sometimes sad, but it is a way to connect with loss. And that's what grief is. It's about loss.
So in dealing with children, Dr. Pearlman, I'm thinking about my middle schoolers, and I'm thinking about, we had a tragic loss this last school year, and some of the students that it affected most, sometimes it's hard to pull language out of middle schoolers or very, very quiet children.
Mm-hmm.
What are some tips that, are there products, are there sensory, are there art supplies? I mean, what could we as school counselors use to draw these students out that just verbally that they're just, we can't get them to talk right now? What do we do?
Well, so the first question I would have is, are you expressing your grief? Do you know what I mean? So I'm talking to the counselor here who's trying to get a student to open up, right? The first thing I would say is, are you saying how sad you are? Because sometimes they need to hear that you too are a human person that also has a loss or had a loss, even if it's not the same loss, and that you were sad, right? We're using basic words that sometimes kids are afraid to use or don't even know to use, right?
Yeah. So yes.
First and foremost is, what are you doing in that session? Are you being vulnerable with this child? The other thing is that, you know those happy to sad faces, that those,
yes.
Sometimes it's about pain. Sometimes it's about emotion. Those are really simple to connect with, right? Kids grow up with the happy faces, the sad faces. Something like that, like point on the range to where you are, you know? And so they don't even have to say the word if they are having struggle with that. They could point to it. My family is from Russia. And when my grandparents were really sick, they were in the hospital. And unless one of my family members was there, they couldn't express, I feel pain, I feel nauseated. So they had these happy faces to sad faces, all of it, you know, the nauseous face, all of that. And they would have to point to it. And it worked. It was a way of communicating without saying a word.
Such a great idea. And you know, our minds go everywhere, Dr. Pearlman. My mind went to when all the students, I'm thinking all the students would come back, but I'm just seeing when we come back, that might be a, or even before they come back, some kind of through Google Classroom, how are you feeling? And monitor, that's tangible. Let's monitor where and go in with those students who may not be able to express that verbally, but that's such a great practical idea.
And it's easy to find, right? You're not reinventing the wheel. Right. This already exists. It's about adapting it to the age, to the school, to the scenario, to whatever it is. And then when they point to whatever that face is, you can say, well, that looks like a sad face. Let's talk about sad. What is sad? How are you sad? It's an opening. A crack in the door.
I'm thinking about grief, and in our community, we experienced, my husband's a teacher, and at his school, they just had a tragedy with a couple of students, and it was hard, it's always hard, but it's more difficult now, I think, because what happens when someone dies is the community comes together. There are hugs. There's the time together. And in this situation, everyone is still isolated. And it concerns me just thinking about the grief our students and families are experiencing in general. That was sort of an eye-opener that became personal, I guess, because I was more in my own life. But I'm concerned about the isolation that people are having to experience. They can't go to a funeral and get hugs and hear the stories and stuff like that. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah. Here's the thing that I believe. It's we are physically isolated from one another, but not emotionally. And though we may not be able to go to the funeral and stand shoulder to shoulder, that doesn't mean that we can't all log into something or sit 6 feet apart away from each other in a big circle and talk. Talk about that person and share the memories and share the grief. We may not be able to stand, you know, shoulder to shoulder, but we certainly can find ways to either get together virtually or get together physically, but keeping that distance to celebrate that life or to grieve that life or to do both and to give that to ourselves. It just is going to look different.
Great advice.
It is great advice. And people, you know, we lose students. It's just in this, and that is, I think, Laura and Dr. Pearlman, we need to have a plan in place for, and it is separate from the COVID. I mean, folks, accidents happen. That caught a school unaware in our community. They look, you know, to lose two high schoolers. So we need, I think, as districts across and counselors are listening, I always, and Laura knows this, I have had enough students to pass away that I have a plan in place ready to go. If it happens in the middle of the night, I have a group that come, I know what to do, but I don't for this. And that is something that we need to prepare for, I think.
That's what I was going to say, Kim, you've got it. You need to teach us how to do that because she did have a tragedy in her school this year. And I mean, within an hour, I guess, the team was there and she had it. She knows. So, Kim, I just had a podcast idea. You're leading it.
Oh, no. I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know what to do in this situation because all of my plans revolve around that interaction, human interaction. But I do believe in being prepared. And so I think that that's something that probably. And I'm sure we're not the only ones that this happened to. Go ahead, Dr. Pearlman.
Sorry, something that might make sense because no one knows what to do with this, right? We're all sort of moving forward as we go along. It may behoove you guys as counselors in your individual schools to form, I don't know if I want to call it a conglomerate of people, to all work on this, right? There was a pandemic task force at some point, somewhere. You can create your own, right? And it could be you could have all sorts of different people from all sorts of different backgrounds contributing to it. No one's ever been through a pandemic that is still in school right now. Yeah. So it would behoove everyone for a group of people who have the skill set and the knowledge base to put something together.
Okay. I do think that I do think it's a need, and there's not a resource out there here, you know. So,
well, and my concern is this is now the precedent that has been set, and so I don't think that this is the last time we'll see this happen. Now, I think that parents are traumatized, and we've talked about it with other counselors that going back, we're going to have to be prepared that if parents hear the first sneeze or sniffle in their child, they're going to be scared. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, I don't think this is the last time that we're going to be doing it this way.
Right.
So
I don't either.
Dr. Pearlman, you are a wealth of information. Laura, do you have any other questions? We have used her time and we are so thankful and so grateful because it really does help counselors. We have counselors listening. We've heard that there are professors who are using this in their classes. So what you say matters. And I know how busy you are and it just, and how valuable your time is. Laura, do you have anything else for Dr.?
Well, I could talk to you all day.
I know she could.
No, I do just want to thank you. You said that your family's mission is to help others. And that's evident in everything that you all do. And so I just want to thank you for everything that you all provide to counselors. You guys are doing a webinar tonight. Mm-hmm. And this is the second one that Kim and I will be attending.
Awesome.
How frequently do you do these webinars?
You know, sometimes it's fly by the seat of our pants, kind of like, we need to do this right now.
Okay.
And so it just kind of happens. It's not, sometimes it's planned, sometimes it's not. This is probably our fourth, maybe fifth.
Okay.
Since all this began, because every time we see a hole, we want to plug it, right? We want to fill that need. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what you're seeing.
And you guys put those on Twitter. So if someone wanted to join, they could follow you and your husband on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And get the information that way.
Absolutely. And my husband has a Facebook page, The Maslow Before Bloom, which is his new book. So they could also get it there, because this particular one is going to focus on that.
Okay.
We enjoyed the last one, and I'm so glad that we know about it, because we are going to, tonight, 6 o'clock our time, right, Laura?
Yes.
6 o'clock our time. So we're excited about it.
Good.
Well, thank you again. You've provided tremendous help for counselors. This is one. There are several episodes that we recommend extend beyond school counselors. This is one of them that I believe all educators, administrators, everybody needs to hear this one, because it is prevalent now, and it's going to continue to be something that we need to focus on.
I appreciate you having me on. I really do.
Thank you.
Tell your husband we said hello.
I will. All right. Well, bye, guys.
Bye. Thank you again.